Blog Talk Radio.
Let's play. I'm the kind of girl, a little mystique, and you're the only one I've ever met who can't handle it. You climb my wall, break down my door. I think you might be just the kind of boy I've been waiting for. I wanna get you out on the floor and dance until my feet are numb. And when you get close, it's like rubber in my bones. And by the look in your eyes, you're melting down into the stage of stone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. You are listening to 13-year-old Amelia Bloom, Australia's singing sensation. She is now about 15, and what a voice. She was on our show, and she called in all by herself. That was wonderful. Thank you, Amelia Bloom. I would love to play radio with you anytime. And tonight, we are going to, I want everybody to get your running shoes, your swim fins, your swimming suit, and all the dreams you ever had about doing all the exercises you ever dreamed of doing, because tonight we have the most inspirational athlete maybe alive on the face of the earth, Mr. Bill Bradley. Mr. Bradley, for fun, I just want to give you a couple of his upcoming events. He is an supreme elite athlete. I don't know what else to say about him, but we're going to let him tell you more himself. But he has, Mr. Bill Bradley has a 292-mile Death Valley run, which is going to be held in July this month, 2010. And he also has the upcoming English Channel 21-mile swim with no wetsuit coming up in September. And those are the kind of extreme events that have earned him the title of Bradley's One Cool Crazy Competitor. I could not believe when someone brought him to my attention and I was reading about him, and I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, my little exercise makes it seem like nothing. Is it? But not only has he completed 7 Ironman triathlons, he also was a self-made millionaire from a chain of video stores that he started, but he had to file for bankruptcy in 2005, and that lost him about $5 million. His second marriage ended in divorce, but I'll tell you what he did to rebuild his confidence. I mean, most people would go for lattes, muffins, sit on the couch, watch TV, Prozac, but not Mr. Bradley. What he did and the events that he has entered to help boost his morale and his confidence since these occurrences, losing the money and the divorce, are mind-boggling. And I do know that the upcoming event, the second one I mentioned, the English Channel, that is his second attempt to do that. So that's going to be really interesting and very inspiring that we all stay tuned. But I've got a whole page here about him. I'm just one of those people. I'd rather let the guests speak for themselves. Hello.
Hi, Judy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing super, man. That was quite an intro. I liked it.
Great. Well, you know, there's just so much. I thought, oh, my gosh, if I read all these events, because they're mind-boggling. You know, for the average person listening, we've heard of marathons, triathlon. But, you know, some of yours get down to things that nobody has ever even dreamed of, Bill. What got you on this road?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. I went through the bankruptcy and unfortunately a divorce right around the same time, and I was devastated. I mean, I could not look people in the eye. My identity, I had started that video chain when I was 24 years old and built it up to, you know, 13 video stores and 4 game stores, and to lose all that, and lose the big house on the hill, the fancy cars, everything. And, you know, unfortunately, the marriage ended at that same, right around that same time, too, was devastating. I walked around and could not look people in the eye. I was all hunched over, and I had no confidence. And I, like you mentioned, I had been doing Ironmans at that time, and I thought that was the end-all, be-all, and I do, like, one Ironman a year. And actually, I'd kind of gotten into a rut with the Ironmans because I'd done so many of them, you know.
Yeah.
And, I'd done 7 over a 9-year period. And if I didn't improve my time, it was like, oh, that was a waste of a year, you know. I mean, because I didn't go faster, big deal, you know. So,
right.
So then I remembered back, and I go, you know, when I had the most fun is when I first started this. And my buddy, I was sitting on my couch at this little rental house I'm at and looking at this small Pontiac Vibe that I was now driving, even before green was as green and in as it is now. And my Escalade was gone, and my Corvette was gone, and everything was gone. And I called my buddy. I said, hey, you went through a bankruptcy 10 years ago. I go, how did you survive? He goes, you need to count your blessings, Bill. And I think for a few minutes, and I go, can you start me off? And he goes, you got your health. I go, yeah, I got my health. And he goes, I go, what else? He goes, you got your health. And I go, yeah, I got my health. I go, anything else? He goes, let's just go with that for now, Bill. So that kind of percolated for a few months, and I was still, you know, depressed, but I would count my blessings that I had my health. I still had my kids, and, you know, I mean, you know, you things you take for granted when you got a whole bunch of stuff, but you go back to the basics, you know. And then my friend, like 4 months later, said, hey, you know, Bill, you've been talking about doing a 50-mile run for a long time. And you know what? The perfect one would be tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, and I had cut my training down a lot because now I'm working full time and everything. And so I was doing like 2 40-minute runs a week and one maybe 2 to 3 hour run on the weekend. Still a nice run on the weekend. But I thought about it all day, and I was so desperate for a new identity because I had lost my identity, you know.
Okay.
And I woke up at like 2 in the morning. And I said, sometimes you just got to say, what the heck, man? And I set that alarm for 3 in the morning for like an hour later. I got up, and I went down and ran that run, 9 hours and 15 minutes, man. Still the best time I've done in that distance.
How long was the run, Bill? 50 miles?
50 miles, yeah. It was around Lake Merced in San Francisco. I went around it 11 and a half times. You almost get dizzy.
Well, you had to be in pretty good shape just to, so your endurance is just built up to the point that it'll, how long would it last? Okay, so you're pretty darn built up. So if you quit tomorrow, how long do you think you would last as far as this incredible amount of
I don't know. I mean, let's just say swim in the English Channel last year, okay? I tried to do the world's toughest triathlon. I went out in June and biked across America in 16 days. That's called RAM. That took me 16 days to do it. I came back in July, 9 days later in the middle of summer, I ran Badwater, 135 miles through Death Valley, you know, where it's 130 degrees, and if you don't run on the white line, your shoes melt, right, you know?
Wow.
And then I had 9 weeks till the English Channel, right? Well, I was so busy training with running and biking that all the way the whole part of the year, I maybe trained 7 or 8 days, period, in swimming. That was it. But I have a big base from all my Ironmans. But I went down to the bay, and I go, and I told some lady, I go, she's asking about my swimming background, and I'd swam 7 miles in a triathlon, a triple Ironman. I've swam 7 miles was my furthest with a wetsuit. But I went down there, and they were very skeptical down at the Dolphin Club where I was swimming with last year. And they couldn't, you know, and I said, you know, they said, you're going to swim the English Channel. You may jump in, swim 10 minutes. Jump out because you're talking 50-degree water, 50-something degree water with no wetsuit. And I went in within a month. I was swimming 6 hours in the bay with no wetsuit.
Oh, my God. 6 hours with no wetsuit because you must have eaten all the time to get the calories to or else you have an extra layer of fat.
Oh, no, I had, when I swam that 6 hours, there is a little rowboat, or I had a little dinghy. I did it three times. I swam 3-6 that are giving you food. You tread. You can't touch anything. You just tread, and then you eat, you know. You eat and drink while you tread water, so you never touch. And but that was all my base. Plus, you know, I'm so mentally tough right now, and mental toughness, mm-hmm. Judy, is kind of like a muscle. It's like you know, once you can go – you know, like a 50-mile run, then I could do a 100-mile run, and then I could do, you know, a 200-mile run, then a 250-mile run, and you just, you can wrap your brain around going to the next level. You can't just, you know, so because I had done so much stuff, I think my brain was so strong that I thought, hey, I could do anything for 6 hours. I've run 100 miles to Alaska. I can do anything for 6 hours, you know.
Well,
that was my mentality.
We have a picture of you, Bill. We have a picture of you on the show's page, description page. And I guess that's when you were running, although you look like you're walking and you're dragging something behind you in the snow.
That's exactly what I was just talking about. My first race that I did in the snow, I have done it twice, but the first year I did it, I went up. And it was pretty unheard of. They did a really big feature on me in my hometown paper because the guy asked me what I said I was going to do a run up in Alaska. I'm going to run 100 miles. And he said, well, have you ever done anything in the snow? Well, I go, I used to downhill ski, but I haven't done that in 5 years. But I've never snowshoed, cross-country skied, camped in the snow, nothing, right? So I end up, I go to this race, and I did go to a camp the weekend before, so I did learn a little bit in the camp. Although they brought all this emergency stuff, they heard, we heard you really don't know what you're doing, so we have this big snowsuit here. We have all this stuff. And that was like, I did like a, you know, a 3 hour run in or a couple hour run in and a couple hour run out that, you know, like a month before. And, but when I went up for the race, I actually went through a 5 hour blizzard during this race
for the 60.
And it was amazing. I was in the middle. I remember I pulled into this rest stop. It was at the 17 mile rest stop. Or whatever it was, around 22 miles, excuse me.
Uh-huh.
And the lady saw me. I was one of the last guys coming in pulling my 40-pound sled, which has your emergency gear and your food and equipment. And the lady looks at me, and I go in and warm up, and she goes, is that all you're going to wear as you leave here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah. She goes, well, don't you have wind pants? I go, yeah, I do. They're on my sled. I got them at Walmart last night. and she goes, well, you better put those on. And she goes, don't you have a thicker jacket? I go, yeah, I got that on my sled too. She goes, you know, it doesn't seem like you know what you're doing. She goes, I've heard the swamp out there is nasty. She said, you see that guy over there? His name's Roger. There's like six of us in this little cabin. You know, there's like 90 people in the race. 30 of us are running. There's people on snow bikes. There's 30 of, and 30 on skis, you know, cross-country skiing. And 97% of these people are from Alaska. And 99% of them are all from cold weather states. And I'm from California. Anyway, so I go over to this guy and I go, hey, you know, she thinks we should team up when we go out there. I said, well, let me tell you, I've run in the snow like three times. I go, you know, let's make sure we're a good fit. What are your qualifications? He says, well, I've climbed Mount McKinley 13 times. I said, oh, we're a good fit. So I swear we come down this hill. We go about a half hour more through these trees. And all of a sudden we go into this big clearing. And now it's starting to get dark, right, because we've been doing this for like 8 or 9 or 10 hours, whatever it is. You know, there's just not much light up there during that time of the year. And I go through these trees, and all of a sudden, I can't believe it, man. All of a sudden, this wind is whipping like 50 miles an hour. The temperature drops like a -5 degrees, and you can't see anything because all this snow is blowing. And Roger just looks at me all calm. He goes, hey, Bill, here's what we're going to do. He says, I'm going to lead for a half hour. Huh? You step in my footprints. And then you're going to lead for a half hour. I'll step in your footprints, and we both look for trail markings. And he was calm as could be. I said, okay. I'm sure my eyes were like as big as saucers, you know. And as we're walking, we walk for about 20 minutes. All of a sudden, this big guy, looked like a mountain man with his big beard and everything, all covered in snow, and he's going the other way. He goes, I've never seen the swamp this bad ever. He goes, I'm quitting. I'm going home. and like 1/4 of the field quit, and me and Roger, we went all the way through it. 5 hours it took to get through this blizzard, you know.
Oh God! What kind of did you have on Gore-Tex, like a special fabric, special fabrics?
Well, here's what I did. I wore my regular running shoes. I really don't get into the details till later. And I wore my regular running shoes, so they got soaked. And so I made it out about 68 miles, and I ended up with really bad hypothermia, and I was shaking. Roger, everybody was done, you know what I mean? They'd all slowly dropped out. I was the last guy still in the race, me and one other guy, except for the people who were ahead. But, you know, as far as... And yeah, the shoes got to me. I did not wear Gore-Tex shoes that year, and I just got really bad hypothermia. They ended up putting me in that snow suit and hauling me out because I could barely, and I could see how people die in the snow because you start shaking so bad that you can't get your sleeping bag open to get in. But they were close enough to me that they were able to stick me in the snowsuit.
Now, you know, you were talking about mental toughness. This is very important for, I feel like, some of the listening audience that will download this and listen to it, Bill. Are you saying that anybody out there in relatively, you know, good shape could actually build up to do any kind of endurance feat and then, you know, once you kind of learn how to do it, and then you let your mental toughness take over? Are you saying across the board that an average person could run 100 miles just by learning how to do their mind right?
Yeah. Well, hey, let me finish on the mental toughness part. I did finish that race the following year, too. So I finished that in 2000. And actually, in the beginning of this year, I did finish that race. So I went back and ran the 100 miles. And I did finish like 6 hours after the cutoff, though. But I did finish it. So let's talk about talent, okay? Let's talk about talent. I was definitely holding the door open when the man upstairs passed out talent.
Yeah.
I was not first in line when they were passing out talent. In high school, when I in eighth grade, I did not make the top three on my track team in the 1320, which is a three-lap race, so I ended up dropping off the track team. Uh-huh. In ninth grade, I got cut from the ninth grade basketball team. In ninth grade, I got cut from the ninth grade baseball team. These were things I'd played all through. I took up soccer in 10th grade because you couldn't get cut because our school, it wasn't very popular there. And so, but I ended up running again. I did grow. I was kind of, I was a slow maturer, so I got behind everybody. And by 11th grade, I was like fifth in league. So I was still okay. I was average, you know. Mm-hmm. But when it came to, like, I've done the Ironmans, I was a mid-pack finisher. I'm not back of the pack, but I'm mid-pack. Okay. When I did marathons, mid-pack finisher. Nothing special. I do believe that people can do amazing things. I mean, you know, you got to get your weight down. You got to build up this. I did do 9 years of doing Ironmans and stuff. You know, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. But I did have a friend that I got all pumped up about doing stuff. And I'm like, because he was like over 300 pounds, and he's an engineer, and he's got all kinds of health problems. And, geez, man, that guy went out. I said, okay, here's the plan. You sign up for a marathon. You got 8 months. We're gonna lose 80 pounds so you can get from 330 to 250, right? Well, he had all these life changes going on. He changed jobs. He lost like 27 pounds, right? He got to like 303, right?
Uh-huh.
And we had signed him up for this marathon. I'm thinking like, hey, you know, it's okay, you know, maybe do something different and go 10 miles, do something. No, he goes, I want to do it. And then his wife looks at me coming out the door, and he goes, you take care of my Timmy. I'm going, don't lay that on me. He's supposed to lose 51 pounds. So I go up there, and I run the race, and I'm waiting for him at the finish, you know. Well, you know, that dang son of a gun, man, he came in at like 8 hours after everybody and finished that thing, man.
Oh,
he just walked 90% of it, and he just finished it. And I'm telling you, he wore that medal around the work because nobody believed he could do a marathon.
Good.
I mean, I'm not anybody to tell anybody what they can't do, man.
Yeah,
I mean, the mind and spirit are amazing,
awesome.
You know, amazing.
I mean, you know, Bill, we have actually a beautiful co-host tonight, and I'd love to introduce her and bring her on up and let her enjoy this show with us. All right. Her name is Miss Rita Graham. And Rita Graham was a protege of the great Ray Charles. She was also a Raylette. And she is going to be introducing her first novel soon. I think it's going to be out in September or October, and that's called Karma Rising. But she's really excited about meeting you and being part of this show because we all need to let me see. Hello, Rita. Hello. Well, I thought that she was there. Okay. We're going to put, so let's continue. She might have just stepped away. Her phone is up here and everything, but no, Rita, so. Oh, here she is. Okay, wait a minute. Hello?
That's not Rita, that's Joan.
Joan, my God, where is Rita? Well, this is great. This is actually Joan Cartwright, am I right? Well, have you been listening to the show? Joan Cartwright is a jazz singer, Bill. Joan, this is Bill Bradley. If you want to tell
him.
And I
guess Joan, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Well,
great.
Well, I guess Rita will be calling in. I'm going to just keep on talking to Bill. And as you can imagine, the feats he's done, Joan, are just out of this world. I am so excited to hear about your upcoming English Channel Swim, Bill. This is the second time.
I know. I have nightmares. Swimming is not my. I didn't learn to swim really till I was 35 years old when I started doing Ironmans. I could swim back and forth in the pool one time, and so I'm not. I have never been comfortable in rough, deep, dark water. And the English Channel brings that.
Yeah.
And like I admit, you know, 21 miles, you not only have the cold, but you have the rough water and you have the distance, you know. So if one doesn't get you, maybe the other is, you know.
Sure.
And so most of the people who swim this are just, they've probably been swimming since they were kids. They're very, very comfortable in the water.
Uh-huh.
When I went out there last year, it was a very, as the guy said, he goes, Bill, a storm we weren't suspecting blew in last night. He goes, the first 2 hours is going to be rough. The first half hour is going to be really rough. Really rough for the English Channel is not good.
It's not good.
Oh, yeah. He had told me a story where he had done my pilot had done 500 swimmers across. And he was kind of kidding with me. He goes, because he knew I was a multi-sport athlete, you know, and they don't, you know, they really go towards the hardcore swimmers out there, tradition, you know. And and so he goes, you know, Bill, you probably will be last the least of any of my swimmers I've ever had. I had one guy jump in and he lasted 15 minutes because he froze up and he just had a panic attack, right? And he lasted 15 minutes. And we have to do six-hour qualifying swims to even go. But that's how freaky that water can be. And so I mean, it was so rough. They take you down the shore and you swim in the shore to get started, you know, at the point at the beach. And when I stood up to get in or to get out, a wave hit me on the back and slammed me onto my knees, and I had to crawl up the beach to get started, you know. And I looked down and I go, oh, Bill, what have you gotten yourself into? You've really done it this time.
Oh,
I say
no.
I don't just face my fears, I slaughter them. And I was facing my fears. I was going after them. And so I jumped in that water, and, oh, my God, it hit me from one way. I could barely tell which way was up, and all I could think was, please last 15 minutes because you don't want to be a laughing stock. Just last 15 minutes. And I kept saying that, and I made it out. I made it 4 hours swimming, you know, 15 minutes at a time. I'd go over to the boat to get the food like we're talking about, you know, just drink some water and drink some little gels. But it was, like, so rough, the water would come over my head and dunk me. And I was like, I would go, so I wasn't really getting much in me. And when I got out 4 hours, right, the pilot calls me over, you know, this English guy, and he says, hey, Bill, I just want to let you know, at the pace you're going, it's going to take you 30 hours swimming.
Oh, my God.
Because I was going so slow because I kept getting weaker and weaker and weaker because I was really getting no fuel in me. And so at that point, my legs were sinking. I was swimming at a 45-degree angle, you know, with my legs sinking. And they're all looking at me on the boat. Everybody's talking to me. All of a sudden, I just start projectile vomiting, like everything that I didn't even get much in me, but all that was coming out. And I ended up, I still swam like another 20 minutes. And my buddy who was on the boat, and he swam the channel last year, he told the girl, he says, you better put your wetsuit on. He's got, Bill's got 5 minutes till his head goes under.
Easy.
So I give it absolutely, absolutely everything. And my saying is that I quit right before I die.
Right before you die.
And it's all in the timing.
All in the timing. But you're gonna go back. You're gonna this time. What are you doing different? I'm really curious. Like, okay, you've got a while now. When is the Death Valley thing? That's right away, right?
Okay, right now the Death Valley starts July 18th. You do it in the heat of the summer, man. It's gonna be 130 degrees out there in the heat of the day, up close to 130 degrees, if not 130 degrees. And you, like I said, if you don't run on the white line, your shoes will melt. I mean, it's that hot. I mean, you in the heat of the day. I've done that race twice, the 135 mile Death Valley, which is considered the world's toughest run. Now, just to give you some ideas of how this stuff all works, climbing Everest, which everybody perceives as being the toughest thing in the world, a lot of that is a perception. 1,300 people have climbed Mount Everest. 800 people have done a Badwater 135-mile run. This double Badwater that I'm going to do, which is I'm running 135 miles halfway up Mount Whitney. I'm going to go the other 11 miles all the way to the very top of Mount Whitney and then all the way back. So it ends up being 292 miles. 23 people have done that.
How far up Mount Whitney? I'm sorry, how far up?
I'm going all the way to the top, 14,945 feet.
So what are you eating, or, you know, you're drinking stuff all the way, calories are...
Oh, yeah. I have a van with me, and I have this great crew chief. Her name is Sarah. She's done numerous of these races with me, and she'll be there with me, and I have my crew. I actually have a guy on my crew. I have really hardcore friends who rode the Atlantic about 4 months ago. And he's going to be on my crew. Since he rode all the way across, I guess he's got nothing to do.
He has nothing to do with his life but to ride. Yeah, that's 292 miles. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it'll be a total of 292 miles. And and I'll be climbing up to the top at 14,945 feet. So I got to tell you something funny, right? You talk about what I do, right? Well, mentally...
Yeah.
I've done Badwater twice. 15 years ago, I went up and did the top of Mount Whitney, which is you don't do that because it's trail, and it's 11 miles. It's called from the Whitney Portal, so it's halfway up to the top. And it took me – it was hard, and it was pretty hard. But then this year, there's been a lot of late snow. It's just been a heavy winter, right? And so my dad goes, you know, you should go down there and go up that mountain, Bill. You haven't done it in 15 years. You should get the lay of the land down there, right? So I drive all the way through the night last week, and I left, you know, on, like, Thursday. I drove all the way through the night, got there Friday morning to get my permit, you know, went up there, studied with the people coming off the mountain what to wear, and then I went and started at 3 in the morning to go up that hill, right? Well, holy cows, I used to train a lot in Lake Tahoe, which is 5,000 to 8,000 feet of elevation. Well, I haven't been doing that, right? I've been down at sea level for, like, a year and a half.
Yeah.
I get into this thing about an hour and a half. I'm going, like, wow. This is really hard to breathe because I'm starting at 8,500 feet and I'm up almost to about 10. And I'm going, I go, this can't be. I don't remember this happening 15 years ago, right? And I go, so then I get out there. This is during my Ironman days, you know, and then I get out there and I get up further. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I get to like the 6 mile mark, like halfway. And I'm like, wow, I'm really, really exhausted. And then this is right when the snow starts. So there's 97 crisscrosses. The trail goes up, you know, back and forth to work its way up to the crest, you know. And so on these, and that's all covered with all kinds of snow, and people are cutting across through the loose rock to get up it, you know, and I see about 10 people going up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start going up this. Well, I'm starting to feel a little better. I think I'm getting acclimatized. And I catch up to three guys up there, and they're crossing this really dangerous spot, you know, where it's really skinny. And two guys say they're not going across, and so I have to walk across this little skinny spot. And then I make it across that with the one guy. And I said, I don't think your two buddies are coming. They didn't look too comfortable with that, you know. And so then we go up the road further, but there was a cable there, so that they freaked out a little bit because you had to go outside the cable. But then we had to go through a similar section further up with no cable. Then that guy I was with, He said, Bill, I ain't going here, man. I'm going back. And he'd been training for 5 months for this event.
Oh.
And so I just took a deep breath, like focused on this little ledge of snow and just walked straight across it, you know, went up. Then I get to the top. I make a wrong turn. I climb for a half an hour down the back of the hill like a real mountain climber, right, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm down there, and which I'm not. And then I look and I see some guys are up near the top, and I had made a wrong turn. I had to climb all the way back up. I'm all exhausted because now I'm doing all this above 14,000 feet. I lay down on my back on the trail. I still got an hour to go to the top, and I've been doing it for 10 hours. And I go, man, I'm almost tempted to go down, but let me check my criteria on quitting. Is death imminent? No. Okay, I'm going to the top. So then I go up to the top, and the ranger's coming down because I'm one of the last people coming up, and he goes, how much further to the summit? He goes, 15 minutes. I go, great, I'm almost there. He goes, well, you know, there's a storm blowing, and you might want to turn around, and Whitney's known for these lightning storms up on the top, you know.
Yeah.
And I go, I'm saying, like, lightning. Well, and he goes, you go past me, you're on your own. I go, well, I got to finish this baby off. So it was crazy. I got lost one more time on the way down. It ended up taking me 21 hours just to do the part that I thought was going to be the easiest of this whole event.
Well, I would love to know. Okay, this all came about, these ultras, after a second divorce and few million dollar loss. What would you do with your neck feet should you have some other tragedy in your life? My God.
I know some of these guys are all talking to me going, what, they're, because I'm turning 50 in 2 weeks right before I do this event, and they're all telling me that they got to do something crazy for their 50th birthday. I think, well, maybe I better not do anything more crazy because I'll be dead.
Oh, my goodness. Well, if you complete the English, you will. I'm sure this time you're going to be. Well, are you going to have to rest? Okay, when you finish this Death Valley thing, are you going to have to rest for a long time before you start? Well, you don't have time, that English.
I don't have time. See, what I do is I throw stuff so close together, it's unheard of. Like this year, you know, I've already done, I ran that 100 mile run in Alaska.
Right.
Then I came back and I did a 200 mile run in my area. But in the middle, after 100 miles, I swam under the Golden Gate Bridge, which is known for its really rough, crazy currents. And then I ran another 100 miles. Then I came back. I like to stay busy. Keeps my mind from focusing on my issues. And I like to stay busy, man. It's just the kind of guy I am, you know. But I do have one message for your listeners, because
yes.
I know I know your people are trying to learn stuff and do stuff.
Yes.
But my main thing is it's not doing this crazy stuff for your listeners. It's that I can do this stuff with my average talent. I can go out and accomplish. I mean, at least I'm going to go for sure the world's toughest endurance events in the world. I'm going to go out and try them. I'm going to make almost all of them. But I do miss occasionally. I've almost froze to death twice, and I've almost drowned. So sometimes I don't make it. But I do make almost all of them. But I'm saying for your listeners to go out, face their fears, and go after their goals, whatever their goals are in life, to take that, you know, whatever it is, however big you want to think, you can do it. Because I have people following. You know, my Facebook, I just saw, wanted to be my friend, the world's best triathlete right now, Chris McLaren in the Ironman, signed up to be my friend. I didn't even, never even qualified to go to Ironman Hawaii. I was a mid-pack finisher. But he signed up to be my friend on the thing, and I'm like, wow, this is really incredible. I go,
Ironman is, I mean, even that event, though, isn't that, you started out just doing, the way you talk about an Ironman triathlon is like it's just, going to the store.
Oh, excuse me, it's Chris McCormick. I apologize. Chris McCormick.
Oh, is he like number one Ironman?
Number
right
one
now?
In the world, and he signed up to be to be my friend. And I was like, wow, that's really great, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing. So you, well, you know, I think that you said you are writing a book about your life. Am I wrong?
I sure am. I just worked on the first chapter today with my buddy, man, you know.
All
right. I mean, I'm only a B-minus in English kind of guy, so I got to work with a ghostwriter.
Oh, so what? You know what? So you get that story down, you know.
Remember, I'm average at everything, Judy. Absolutely everything. Except I'm pretty darn good at suffering.
You show up and you suffer.
Oh, yeah. I'm very good in that area.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we started the show was for youth around the world that might listen to the show at some point, because they're all downloadable. They're on iTunes, a million other, you know, podcast places. And you might have some young person that goes, oh, well, I just can't. I'm like, but, you know, here you are. You didn't make the English Channel bill, but you're going to try it again. Obviously, you didn't do the Alaska thing, but you went back and this time you did it. So there's something to be said about, I don't know, you know, maybe some people are just afraid to even fail once, you know?
I think, like I said, I had no ego, man. If I didn't make that 50-mile run, I had no ego. And you know what? When I did that thing, Bob Padecki did this article on me in the Press Nemec. It was huge because I was training a meat locker for that thing in Alaska, so I'm pedaling a stationary bike. I'm pulling a sled up and down the beach. I'm doing what I can do to train for it in my area, you know, where the temperatures doesn't even snow here, right?
Yeah.
And when I went up, and I didn't finish that thing, right, and I gave it everything I had, absolutely everything, until I'm in a snowsuit. And you know what? There was not one person that had a critical thing to say to me. Not one.
Not one.
Not one person had a critical thing to say to me. There was just respect for me getting out there and trying. And I've talked to some of the greatest swimmers around, and who are college swimmers, everything, who could do the English Channel in half the time I could do the English Channel.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even want to go out and try. And they could do it in half the time. But you know what? I'll go out there, and I'll jump in that really rough water. And the girl said to me when she saw me, she says, Bill, you had fear in your eyes the whole 4 hours. It is very unusual for people to try to swim the English Channel who are afraid of water. I said, I'm not afraid of water. It's only rough, cold water. With big giant waves in it.
That is so funny. You had fear in your eyes
the whole time. She said, that's why I couldn't process my food, and I had to throw it all up. It just wasn't going anywhere.
Well, at least this time, you know what to expect. So I'm sure the fear
will... Oh, yeah. No, I'm going out before this. I've already been swimming a ton. I went in the pool for successive weeks just to build up my distance. A three-hour swim on a Saturday, a four-hour, five-hour, six-hour, seven-hour, and an eight-hour swim on a Saturday. That's really weird, swimming back and forth in a pool for 8 hours.
I'll say.
And so what I'm going to do before I go, though, I'm going out in the open ocean, and I'm going to get beat up really bad. That's my plan until I'm comfortable with it. And I've already started to work on it, you know, in certain areas of the bay where you can get it. I've already been starting to work. I've already done, working my way up in the bay on my length of swims. This is stuff I never did before. I didn't have time before. And so I'm already ahead of schedule. But the biggest thing, I think, if I don't freak out, you know, that's a big if. and if I can handle the cold, you know, because I am I take a lot longer than those really fast swimmers. It's going to be a 17 to 19 hour swim. But for me, 17 to 19 hours, if I'm going to run through Death Valley for 7 days, 17 to 19 hours just shouldn't seem that long. Although that 4 hours when I swim in the English Channel was the longest 4 hours of my whole life by far. Time went by so slow. Because I was swimming in my nightmare.
Here it goes again. You know, have you heard of that woman, what is her name, Karen Rogers, the 43-year-old?
I love Karen Rogers. I just talked to her. It was like yesterday. Oh, no, I love Karen Rogers. You know what she's doing, right?
Well, yeah, why don't you tell the audience? I just heard
about
it. Oh,
yeah, Karen Rogers, I love. She's going to teach me how to swim the dang English Channel, man. She's a swimmer. I mean, that's what she does. She's already swam around Lake Tahoe. There's only about 20 people that have done that ever. It's like 21 miles across. She swam from Golden Gate Bridge to and set the record down to the San Mateo Bridge, which I think is also about 20 miles.
Yeah.
And she came up with this idea to swim from the Fairlawn into the Golden Gate. And it hasn't been done in 40 years. Number one, there's a lot of sharks out at the Fairlawns. Number two, it's 29 miles, and that water is really, really rough out there. And it's really cold. When I go over to swim the English Channel, it'll probably be in the low 60s. She's going to be swimming in the high 40s of water out there.
Oh, my God.
There.
Oh,
oh
no.
Yeah. A six-man relay just tried this and did not make this swim, you know. So
oh.
She's going out there. She's done her homework. She's been out there swimming in that ocean, doing it. I said, Karen, aren't you afraid of sharks? That's another one of my fears. And I'm worried about hanging around her because if she makes it and I make my English channel, the next thing I know, I'm going to be cannonballing off the dang Farallon
yep.
Islands, you know.
You'll be
because I have a fear of sharks and I hate being afraid of anything. She says, no. She goes, Bill, they're not trying to eat me. They're trying to eat seals. And in that month, they go on vacation. Most of them. I go. I hope a couple strays didn't stay back. You know, like they weren't feeling well, so they didn't go on vacation to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And she says what they do when they leave the island in the first quarter miles, the most dangerous. They'll put a kayak in front of her and a kayak behind her. So when the shark looks up, it's a bigger silhouette than a seal. And I'm like, God, I hope that works. And I tell my buddy that, they go, what if they think it's a really big seal? And she said in her practice swim, she swore that she swam across a baby big white. You know, those are big white, the great whites out there. And she swore she saw one below her.
I
just love her to pieces. And I'm going to actually go out, because she's swimming on Friday, and I'm going to go out in our little harbor area and swim with her like the last half a mile in, you know, to celebrate with her. She invited me to do that with her, you know.
Oh, congratulations.
She pumps me up. She treats me, she's very nice to me. She gives me, you know, the tips and she goes, I swam with her one time, and she's much faster than me, so she kind of waits for me. But she's always got this big smile on her face, like a Cheshire cat. She loves the water. She's like part. I'm like the opposite of her, man. I'm like, oh, my God, the water. Oh, geez. Face your fears, Bill. Show up and suffer. And she's like, she just goes, I think I'm part, you know, some sort of sea lion or something.
Now, what about the Catalina Ocean Swim? Have you done
that? Yeah, I have not. I know guys who've done that. I have not. I mean, I went for the English Channel because it's got the stigma and all that, you know. It's just the English Channel. It's like it's the Everest of swimming. That's what it's called, of open water swimming. Catalina is probably almost as tough, but it, you know, I mean, I might do it. It's just, you know what I mean? It doesn't carry the cat. If I'm going to go out there and swim 21 miles and get sick and get the crap, you know, beat up, I'm going to, you know, probably try and do the one that's the most famous, you know.
The big one. The English
Channel. The big one. Yeah, the people are going, oh, the English Channel, you know. Although I've had people go, yeah, but have you swam Alcatraz? I go, yeah, I swam Alcatraz. It's a mile and a half. I go, the Alcatraz must have a better PR agency.
Bill, people don't have any idea. I mean, because you're going from one sport to another, even though you say, you know, it's the mental and everything, but your body's using totally, you know, different muscles. And I had heard that swimming is the toughest. What do you think? You've done them all. What to you is
the toughest? If you talk to Karen will go, I can't imagine running 300 miles because 10 mile, I've never ran more than 10 miles in my life.
Yeah.
So I think it's whatever, you know, when people say, what's the hardest thing? You know, I think it's oranges and apples, and I think it's whatever you're comfortable with. So guys who are natural swimmers and are comfortable in rough water and cold water, they're going to think, yeah, probably running, 100 miles is way harder than swimming the English Channel because those guys can blow the English Channel out in 10 hours, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10 hours, to me, if I was comfortable, is nothing for me. I mean, like for me, biking or running in something, one of my comfort zones, it's nothing for me. I mean, it's like I don't even notice it, you know.
You're just
and so if they felt that way, yeah.
Well, when you come back, okay, when you complete the English Channel, Bill, what is your net? Do you have another endurance thing set up?
Well, okay, let me tell you. Another one about feasting my things. After I did the one in Alaska and I conquered that, I finished Alaska last year, 2009. You're right. This is 2010. That's when. So 2008, I tried it the first time. This is sitting at 100. 2009, I accomplished it. This year, because I always have to one up myself, I went out to do the Arrowhead 135. So it's 135 miles in northern Minnesota, right?
Well,
not the stigma of Alaska. Everybody thinks, oh, Alaska, you know, that's wilderness. It's crazy, and it is crazy. But it's southern Alaska. The weather in northern Minnesota, which is the coldest spot in the continental U.S., is as cold as northern Alaska, but it doesn't have the PR department, okay?
Right.
So I went out there, and I attempted to run 135 miles because, like I said, I mentioned the other one got down to -5 in a blizzard, stuff like that. well, this thing can go to negative 50. So I went out there and I'm running, and at night it dropped down to a negative 20 at night. And I was, as usual, I didn't quite have the right equipment. I bought the best gloves at the IRREI in Santa Rosa. You know, I go, give me your best mountaineering gloves. And I thought that was the best, right? Well,
yeah.
They were great during the day, but at night, oh, my God, my hands were freezing. My Camelback froze, so I couldn't drink water. Every time I would stop, I would shake like I couldn't, like just like I mentioned in the blizzard at the end. But this is just because it's so cold, that it was a wet cold, you know what I mean? It's different than a dry cold. I'm learning all this because my meat locker goes to a negative 20. And anyway, and I would stop and I would shake uncontrollably. So I got out to, you know, as usual, I'm way behind. A guy came out on a snowmobile to get me. He goes, you're 2 hours behind the last competitor. You're 4 hours behind the cutoff. It's this little sag wagon thing. Two people came out on a thing, and I go, dude, I don't ride those things. I finish, man. I go, and I'm feeling good now because I had a lot of trouble, the first night. Now it was during the day of the second day, right? You know?
Right.
And I said, I got my second win. Well, then it turned night again, right? And it went back to that negative 20 again. And I'm trying to make it to the 78-mile cutoff or 78-mile thing. And when I get there, right, it's this little restaurant, right, this little cafe in the middle of nowhere's, right?
Uh-huh.
And I get there, and the guy had left like 6 hours ago or 5 hours ago, and he left. And I go there, I'm telling you, I haven't drank in a while because every time I drink, I would freeze when I tried to drink out of my Camelback because I'd have to pull it around to my front. The hose is what was froze, you know, that you suck out of, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would have to drink out of it, but every time I would stop, it was such a cold that would hit you. It was unbelievable. And so I just kept going. So then I'm all depleted when I hit the little cafe. It's dark. The cafe's dark. And then I'm like, I look at the parking lot. There's not a car in the parking lot. I go, they left me. They forgot about me. They left me because I'm 6 hours behind the cutoff. I run around the building beating on the windows, right, you know? And now I notice, and I have never panicked. I mean, I may have fear in my eyes in that English channel, but I never panicked. All of a sudden, I'm like this. I catch myself. I'm going, I'm looking like, what the heck am I doing? And then I'm starting to shake really bad. So I run for my sled. Remember, you got to get into your sleeping bag while you can. So I sprint to my sprint. You know what I mean? I shuffle over there. I whip out my sleeping bag. I don't even pull the pad out, man, because I'm so nervous. And I shake it. I get the thing open. Then I climb in it, pull it over my head, zip it back up. And I'm like, I'm breathing like, and I go, oh, come on, you sissy. You're in the sleeping bag. Knock it off. So I had to give myself a little pep talk. And then I go, okay, think clearly. What can you do? How about let's call a cab? So I had cell reception. I go, I don't care if it's $1,000. I can always run from the guy. No, just kidding. And so I try to call a cab. Well, it doesn't work, right? And now my fingers are all blistered, and I think I have I've like burnt my fingers with frostbite, you know, because I'm out there because it was so cold at night. And so the colder my fingers would get, the tighter I would hold on those little, you know, those little heat pad things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just grabbing them barehanded to try and keep my hands warm because I had these blisters on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pull. So then I'm sleeping in that little sleeping bag there, and I'm in there. I'm out there like 3 hours on this ice-covered parking lot just in my sleeping bag. And my old saying is that if I did die ever in the cold, I would freeze in the disco pose like John Travolta with my finger in the air. And I knew right before I got in that sleeping bag, I might have to warm that little baby up, you know. But but anyway, so then I hear this voice, and it goes, hey, Bill. And I go, I think I'm like, you know, I go, this is good. This sounds like a human, right? Because I can't see anything around when I looked around. It's dark, you know what I mean? It's pitch black, you know.
Uh-huh.
And before I got in the sleeping bag, and it was a guy I had been with earlier in the thing, one of my buddies, right? He was with me earlier and before he had left me because I was so slow and I had to stop at the first checkpoint for a while. Anyway, so he goes, hey, what do you think about coming into a warm cabin? I go, oh, no, I'd rather stay here on this ice-covered parking lot in my sleeping bag. So anyway, he called me, you know, it was only like a quarter mile away around this hill and somebody had seen me. And so we went and I walked over there and I go in this, there's a big fire. I was visualizing the big thing, the big everything. And now, Yeah, I'm so far behind now. You know, I'm like still got 70 miles to go. My race was over. You know, I mean, that thing was done. I couldn't do it without some support out there with those type of conditions. You know,
no.
But that's what I'm doing in February. I'm going back to do that crazy thing.
You're gonna go back in February?
Heck yeah. It's the year of redemption. I've gone 9 races in a row or 10, and it finished everything, you know. I mean, everything. And then I hit 2 in a row that I didn't finish. I said, oh, my goodness, I'm in a slump. It's just that they're getting so hard now. It's unbelievable, the things that I'm doing. They're so hard. It's, you know, it's 50-50. My sister goes, why don't you play it safe, Bill, and do something you can finish? I go, I don't do it. I don't play it safe. I don't, you know. So it's 50-50 if I'm going to make it, you know.
Well, now, is your sister – yeah, I didn't even ask you. Is anybody in your family an athlete besides you, or are they
– Oh, my one sister – yeah, I mean, they're all – yeah, they're all – everybody's kind of an athlete, you know what I mean? My one sister, you know, ran in high school and did all that. She runs half marathons and marathons now, so she's a definitely – she's a good runner, you know. Then my other sister has done a half marathon. My brother's more of a, you know, more of a weight trainer type of guy, so
yeah.
And my dad gets out and walks every morning with his wife and does stuff, you know, and so
yeah.
Everybody, you know, they're all trying to stay pretty physically active, you know, of some sort. But yeah, not this extreme. Let me tell you one funny part. So when I'm laying there, I had this GPS right with me so people can track me. When I was laying there for my 3 hours, my dad calls the race director. He goes, you got to go get my son. He goes, he's been laying by this lake. I was by some, I guess there's a frozen lake, must be near that parking lot or something. He goes, I'm worried he fell in the lake. He's been there for 3 hours and hasn't moved, right, you know. And the lady goes, she goes, well, we one of our snowmobiles is broken, and we can't just send one out by itself. It's too dangerous.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
And I'm out there, man. I love this crazy stuff. My dad, the ex-Marine, was really worried. I said, Dad, I'm never going to – you can't look at those GPS things again.
I have a heart attack.
He's like telling him, he says, well, if you see him, don't you let him go on. I go, hey, Dad, I'm 50 years old. You can't say that.
Your dad's after you even now. What do you do to relax? Well, I go out and run 50 miles. Or I mean, do you ever do any, like, go to the movies or...
I actually do like the movies, but I really don't go very often because I'm so tired after I get done training and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I'll go sit in a hot tub and try to relax. But, oh, I'll tell you one other kind of interesting thing that I've been doing training-wise to get ready for these two races is one is extreme heat and one's, you know, is cold for the English Channel, right?
Okay.
So one minute I'm swimming in San Francisco Bay.
Okay.
And later in the day, I'm up in my sauna, which is at my club, goes to 225 degrees, and I was just in there yesterday for 38 minutes at 225 degrees. I literally almost boil myself, and then I have to climb into the little, you know, the shower with the handicap shower with a seat, and I have to sit in there for up to 15 minutes until I can finally, like, stagger out of the place. But it's like my body, I'm training it for cold and heat at the same time, which is really probably driving it crazy.
That's really hot. Now, do you have, is it called a high oxygen stimulator, or do you just go up and
I just bought one of those. Is it a stimulator?
It is.
I bought a thing to breathe because I got killed so bad. It just came in the mail yesterday. It was like I said, oh, I got to find something because I'm getting killed on this oxygen thing. You know, I can't do that in the race. And so I just bought it. It was like $500 or something. But I go, it's, you know, which is a lot of money to me. But I go, but I'm not going to make that race, or I mean, it's going to take me forever. So I'm dying to go home and try it. It's funny. It's the newest, hottest thing, I guess, you know. Is it called a stimulator? Is that what it's called?
You know
what?
I read about that so many years ago. So I don't know. All I know is I saw in a magazine, I think people were like jogging on a treadmill and they had this oxygen, like they were up 12,000 feet, but they were actually below sea level, but they were getting ready for some event. So
yeah, and this guy, what he does is you go 5 minutes on at 20,000 elevation. This machine makes it like it's 20,000 feet. You breathe for 5 minutes. Then you breathe 5 minutes off. You're just doing it as you're watching TV or something, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just sitting, you know, and doing it, and you keep working your way up for this two-week period. So I had to, like, overnight, I go, dude, I got exactly, like, 2 weeks. This is a crash course in fixing this thing. I can't go up after I run Badwater. Let me tell you about Badwater when I finished it last year, if you want to know how hard it is. When I finished, this is just the 135 miles through Death Valley, halfway up the hill, right? The world's toughest one. My crew chief, Sarah Heretic, is a crew chief extraordinaire, is also a masseuse. Uh-huh. So she takes me back to the hotel. My legs start firing off. I mean, cramping, like, really bad. The one quad would go off. She'd run over there, try and rub it to calm it down, right? The other quad would go off, right? This went on for about half an hour. Then I go, well, let's get in let's fill that bathtub with ice. We couldn't get it to stop. She couldn't even keep up with it. So then it's after I've been tortured for 59 hours, you know. And then fill the bathtub with ice, jump in that. It keeps going through that. It keeps going even in the bathtub as long as I could stay in there because I was so depleted. I was getting freezing in there. So then I jumped out. I put my legs elevated against the wall, trying to drain the whatever's causing this out of it, you know, if it's acid or whatever it is. I don't want to get all technical with you.
Yeah, don't
do that. So anyway, like I could. I just show up and suffer, remember? So anyway, so I try and drain this acid out. It keeps going. I look at Sarah. I go, Sarah, how long can this go on for? It's been already going on like an hour. She goes, Bill, it will go on till your legs tire out. 3 hours my legs cramped for. She goes, I've never, ever seen anything like this. But that is how hard I push my body. And after finishing that, now I got to go up Mount Whitney and go all the way back to the start.
Oh, Jesus. Bill, you're incredible. You know, we're almost out of time. God, I could listen to you for the rest of my life. This is really amazing. I want to tell you that all the people listening and everybody that's going to download the podcast of this, is there any way that, well, I don't know, they're not going to televise you, right, when you're running the...
I will have that GPS thing that my dad is allowed to follow me in the desert because I have a van near me, so I probably won't die. I'll probably just get in critical heat stroke condition, but I won't die. I promise him. Hopefully. Well, maybe I gotta like semi-promise him because I do have to go up that mountain again. But, yeah, I will have a GPS. So I am on Facebook. I am on Twitter also.
Okay. All right.
You know, so I'm under both of those. I'm under Epic Bill Bradley on Twitter, and I'm under Bill Bradley on Facebook, not the senator.
Yeah, you know what? That's interesting. And also BillBradley.org because that senator, it comes up, and I believe he was also a basketball player. Am I wrong?
He's a great athlete. He's a great guy. But you know what? I'm starting to get his emails and stuff, so people are tracking me and thinking I'm him. I'm sure he's like, people are thinking he's running a double Badwater. Hey, but I would like to bring up one last quick thing. I do want to bring attention to the Gulf oil spill also. While I'm out there suffering, I mean, I want, you know, we got all these birds and mammals and stuff suffering, and I am doing this, you know, to bring attention to the AudubonInstitute.org. They are raising money to help the mammals out there that are having problems in the Gulf. And so I do want to bring that up. So if I can do a little suffering and bring some attention to animals that are doing a lot of suffering, I'd like to do that. So.
Thank you. And that's could you get that name again?
Yeah, it's www.AudubonInstitute.org is their website.
AudubonInstitute.org. And we have been talking to the amazing Bill Bradley. And I want all of you just to go and look at his website and look at some of the videos where he's been interviewed on TV. So that's www.BillBradley.org. And after you do that English, the marathon, you know, just come back. We want to hear more.
I may have to do the English channel 5 times till I do it, Judy. But you know what? I will do it 5 times. I'll be like the oldest guy ever to swim the channel. They go, this guy just keeps coming back. He's like 99.
All right. That turns me on. You know, that's just what we want.
I think my odds are 50-50 of making it this time. I don't, you know, maybe less. That's me being an optimist. But, you know, I'm going to give it absolutely everything I got till I got 5 minutes till I drowned again.
God bless you, Bill. And we are going to go out with John Lennon's Imagine. Imagine you have completed the English Channel Swim. Thank you, Bill Bradley.
Thank you, Judy. You're wonderful.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love Talk Radio.
the world.